that is backed by many countries. And we understand as a people that we don't have military might, we don't have, you know, firepower, but we do have a strength in that our people can come together in peace and nonviolence, and we will stand up and we will stand for the protection of these places and of our resources.
Camille, we have to leave it there. I thank you so much, Camille Kalama, as well as Professor Kamana Beamer. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
À la ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie, et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires.
You are tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO's end-of-year drive is happening right now. We invite you to become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Contribute now through December 31st and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 thanks to the generous support of the Ronnie S. LaCroute Fund of the Oregon Community Foundation. Join the KBOO family today at kboo.fm/give.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. The Biden administration makes 500 million at-home COVID tests available for free as Omicron sweeps the nation. The city of Portland is set to pay $100,000 to settle a lawsuit stemming from a 2020 protest. And Kellogg workers approve a new contract ending their 11-week strike. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, December 21st, 2021. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu. The Oregon Health Authority reported another 1,941 new cases of COVID-19 over the weekend. Oregon health officials also announced 3 new deaths. That brings the state's total case count above 407,000 and raises the death toll to 5,534 people. There are currently 352 people hospitalized statewide, including 101 patients in intensive care units. As of Monday, 2.75 million people in Oregon had completed a COVID-19 vaccine series. According to federal health officials, the Omicron variant has raced ahead of others and is now the dominant version of the coronavirus in the U.S. The Omicron variant accounted for 73% of new infections last week. In much of the country, it's even higher. Omicron is responsible for an estimated 90% or more of new infections in the New York area, the Southeast, the industrial Midwest, and the Pacific Northwest. Federal health officials have said they are not surprised by the data showing Omicron overtaking Delta in the U.S., given what was seen in South Africa, the U.K., and Denmark. They predict increased spread over the holidays, including breakthrough infections among the vaccinated and serious complications among the unvaccinated that could stress hospitals already nearing capacity. CDC officials said they do not yet have estimates of how many hospitalizations or deaths are due to Omicron. The Biden administration announced on Tuesday that it will make 500 million at-home COVID tests available for free. Next month, the federal government will start mailing at-home COVID test kits for free to any U.S. household that requests one. The White House is setting up a website for people to submit their requests. The administration did not specify how many tests each household can receive or how quickly. The federal government also plans to set up new testing sites nationwide in addition to the 20,000 already operational, with the first one opening in New York City before Christmas. In addition to detailing the free testing kits and sites, Biden announced Tuesday that he is directing 1,000 members of the military to help hospitals shore up their staffing, as well as deploying the Federal Emergency Management Agency to set up overflow operations for hospitals that are at capacity. Federal health officials continue to urge people to take mitigation precautions and get vaccinated, including getting their booster shot. Even though the Omicron variant is spreading this holiday season, Americans can still take vital steps to guard their health, such as getting a flu shot and returning for routine checkups. An American Heart Association report shows getting a flu shot provides double protection for people with heart disease. Diane Bernard has more on the story.
With COVID cases on the rise this holiday season, health officials are also encouraging folks to get their flu shots and get an annual checkup before the end of the year after many postponed these two healthcare steps during the pandemic. Getting a flu shot is beneficial during the COVID crisis, but many people don't know that the shots also have value for folks with heart disease. Dr. Ameya Kulkarni is a cardiologist with Kaiser Permanente. He notes an American Heart Association study shows if you've had a heart attack, a flu shot lowers your risk of dying.
If you have heart disease or have had a stroke or had bypass surgery or a heart attack, getting that flu shot is not only protecting you from getting the flu, it's potentially protecting you from dying from really any cause. And so it's a really neat additional benefit of getting the flu shot.
He says the flu shots are quick and administered with COVID safety precautions. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends flu shots for most people 6 months of age and older, and especially those at high risk for developing complications. Kulkarni says many have put off going to the doctor's office during the pandemic for routine checkups and treatment plans. He says many healthcare facilities are using protective measures to make visits safer. And if you can't afford to see a doctor right now, there are easy steps you can take to maintain your health.
The simple things you can do is to sort of know your numbers and pay attention to your symptoms. If you know your blood pressure, that's a key thing to know. And just trying to stay active, keep a good diet, those are things you can do to reduce your risk of having a long-term illness. And also, if you have an illness, identifying it early.
Many doctors now offer telehealth visits if you're still concerned about seeing someone in person. For more information on flu vaccines and going back to the doctor, go to the American Heart Association website at heart.org. I'm Diane Bernard reporting.
The city of Portland is poised to pay a $100,000 settlement to a man who was pepper sprayed, thrown to the ground, and unlawfully arrested during a September 2020 protest at Kenton Park. 40-year-old Dmitry Stoyanov of Vancouver sued the Portland police, saying he was arrested because he refused to relinquish the "Vote Register Here" sign he was holding during a demonstration in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. The ordinance that will go before the city council states, quote, "The investigation indicates there is risk the city may be found liable. Therefore, in order to avoid the risk of an adverse jury award, we feel it is prudent to compromise the lawsuit at this time," end quote. The city council will vote Wednesday on the settlement, which is the latest in a string of payouts this year, stemming from police actions during protests dating back to 2016. According to public records, the city of Portland will have paid at least $335,000 this year to settle protest-related lawsuits involving police. Other recent protest-related city settlements include paying $125,000 to settle an excessive force lawsuit filed by a man who was struck in the head by a flashbang grenade fired by police during an August 2018 rally, and $50,000 to settle a lawsuit filed by a woman who was injured by a flashbang grenade during another 2018 protest. Kellogg employees, who have been on strike since October 5th, have voted to ratify a tentative labor contract at the company's four U.S. cereal plants. The contract covers about 1,400 workers, represented by the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers International Union at plants in Michigan, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee. The union said the contract is a win for workers. The contract includes cost-of-living adjustments and a $1.10 per hour raise for all employees. It also provides an accelerated, defined path to top-tier wages and benefits for transitional workers. Union President Anthony Shelton said, quote, "This agreement makes gains and does not include any concessions," end quote. Throughout the strike, Kellogg has been trying to keep its plants operating with salaried employees and outside workers. And the company said late last month that it planned to start hiring permanent replacements for the striking employees. President Joe Biden sharply criticized Kellogg for threatening to permanently replace workers, saying that doing so would undermine the collective bargaining process. Workers that have been on strike since early October will return to work on Monday after the Christmas holiday. Groups that fight poverty and promote health care are speaking out against Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, who pulled his support for President Joe Biden's Build Back Better agenda. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Nonprofits that promote affordable health care and working families in Nevada are regrouping to fight for President Joe Biden's domestic agenda after West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin rejected the Build Back Better Act, saying it is too expensive, thus dooming it in a divided Senate. Build Back Better would invest billions to fight climate change, lower the cost of child care, and keep the monthly child tax credit checks flowing. Annette Magnus with Battleborn Progress says the legislation is crucial, especially during this continuing pandemic.
It's devastating. You know, we're going to keep fighting. We're on Facebook and Twitter today asking Joe Manchin to reconsider because Americans are counting on this relief, and this is the time to make bold action.
The bill also would limit the price of prescription drugs, extend subsidies to help people afford health insurance, and establish a national paid leave program and pre-K for all four-year-olds. The Build Back Better Act also would extend Medicaid for a full year to pregnant women. Kendall Lyons with the Children's Advocacy Alliance in Las Vegas says that change would improve rates of maternal mortality.
It would allow postpartum pregnant people to get care that they need to address health complications that we know happen after that 60-day period, such as postpartum hemorrhage, postpartum depression.
Manchin has left open the possibility of further negotiations on pieces of the bill. This is Suzanne Potter reporting.
Jury deliberations are underway in the trial of Kimberly Potter, a former police officer who shot and killed Dante Wright during a traffic stop in a Minneapolis suburb in April. With more on the story, it's Georgia Fort with the Racial Reckoning Project.
Closing arguments concluded Monday afternoon and the state rested its case. Attorney Crump addressed the media during deliberations, calling for Potter to be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law.
The case was made. The evidence is there. She violated the policies of the police department.
During closing arguments, Aaron Eldridge, one of the prosecuting attorneys, told the jury not only did Potter take Dante's life, but she also jeopardized the lives of her colleagues.
If anyone saved Sergeant Johnson's life, it was Dante Wright when he took a bullet to the chest.
Eldridge also went head-to-head with the defense's main argument that Potter's actions were a mistake, accidentally mistaking her gun for her taser.
Human nature did not kill Dante Wright. The defendant did. The defendant told Dr. Miller, "I don't make mistakes. Take that for what you will."
In closing arguments, the defense told the jury that Dante Wright, not Potter, was responsible for his death.
Her acts were all legal. Everything she did was legal. And then he tries to break away.
The jury began its deliberations in the early afternoon. Later, Dante Wright's family gasped when they saw the judge resume the bench, thinking the verdict may be in. In fact, the jury had paused its deliberations to ask when one of Potter's interviews with the defense's doctor took place. Judge Chu responded to the jury, telling them they have all the evidence they need to decide the case. For the Racial Reckoning Project, I'm Georgia Fort.
Racial Reckoning, the Arc of Justice, is produced and supported by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, in partnership with KMLJ Radio and the Minnesota Humanities Center.
Fraud experts say holiday scams are rampant this year, with criminals targeting gift cards, online shopping, and package delivery. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Scams separate millions of Americans from their money this time of year, and experts have some tips on how to avoid being defrauded. One of the biggest holiday season scams involves gift cards, where someone has scratched off the back to reveal the code, often replacing it with a small sticker. Once you buy it, they drain the card almost instantly. Strat Maloma with AARP California advises people to buy gift cards online, or at least pay attention to where they are sold in the store.
Try and buy gift cards that are behind the counter. Avoid the ones that anybody who walks into the store can pick up.
Another common scam involves fake charities or groups that may spend up to 90% of their donations on so-called administrative costs. You can research groups you're considering on websites such as Give.org, CharityWatch.org, or CharityNavigator.org. There are also great tips on AARP's Fraud Watch site, and you can get tips or file a complaint on the Federal Trade Commission's website. Maloma says for online shopping, you must go directly to the seller's website. Do not click on a link in a marketing email, text, or social media post.
You enter it several times and you find it's not taking you to the link. What the scammer is doing, they're getting your personal information, which then allows them to shop on your name or take over your account.
In addition, experts warn against the legion of porch pirates who roam neighborhoods looking for packages to steal. FBI data show that last year during the holidays, consumers filed 17,000 complaints about undelivered packages worth $53 million. This is Suzanne Potter reporting.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned at 6 for Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be rainy with a low of 46 degrees. Tomorrow will again be rainy with a high of 49 degrees. The National Weather Service has issued a special weather statement warning of colder than normal temperatures, which raise the possibility of snow and ice. Today in history, in 1891, 30-year-old James Naismith introduces the first game of basketball. Based on 13 rules created by Naismith, the game was tested by 18 students at the International Young Men's Christian Association Training School in Springfield, Massachusetts. Two teams of 9 players each competed against each other, with the objective to throw a soccer ball into a peach basket attached to a balcony 10 feet above the floor. The quote of the day is from American civil rights activist, lawyer, and author Pauli Murray, who was the first African-American woman to be ordained as an Episcopal priest. Murray said, quote, "One person plus one typewriter constitutes a movement." The EPA announces new rules for vehicle mileage standards. The White House says President Joe Biden and Senator Joe Manchin remain friends. And the Omicron variant now makes up more than 73% of U.S. COVID-19 cases. With more on the story, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We spend so much money on gasoline, and this improvement in greenhouse gases and improvement in fuel economy will save consumers hundreds of billions of dollars.
Jeff Alson of the Environmental Protection Network, a group of concerned former EPA officials, applauded the agency's new final rules for vehicle mileage, raising standards for cars and small trucks to reach 40 miles per gallon over the next 5 years, reversing a Trump-era rollback. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin said in a radio interview Monday his fellow Democrats failed to adequately respond to his concerns and cut down the size of the Build Back Better bill, forcing him to drop his support. However, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Biden and Manchin remain on good terms.
He's worked with Senator Manchin over the course of decades. They share fundamental values. They're longtime friends. That has not changed.
The Omicron variant now makes up more than 73% of the majority of COVID-19 cases in the United States, according to the CDC, demonstrating the variant's rapid spread. At the National Press Club on Monday, Chief Medical Advisor to the President, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said,
"We have not yet seen the full impact of the very ominous Omicron variant."
A federal appeals court has reinstated the Biden administration's vaccine or testing mandate for companies with 100 or more employees. A recent Wall Street Journal poll found Hispanic voters were split evenly between Democrats and Republicans on a generic 2022 congressional ballot. In a 2024 hypothetical rematch between Trump and Biden, Hispanics favored Biden by only a single point. And while Biden's popularity has plummeted across the board, the decline has been sharpest among Hispanics. Senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, Roy Teixeira, is concerned about the Democrats' focus on identity politics.
The more you talk about that kind of stuff, and the more you're identified with it, the less you become identified with more mundane concerns, and may in fact be why a group like Hispanics liked your party.
Hispanics gave Trump more support in 2020 than in 2016, in a 16-point shift. Finally, former President Donald Trump filed a lawsuit against New York Attorney General Letitia James on Monday in his latest attempt to halt her civil investigation into his business practices. He alleges James's inquiry violated his constitutional rights. The investigation is probing whether Trump's company committed financial fraud in the valuations of properties to different entities. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The leader of a tribal organization serving interior Alaska villages is ousted, and a second tribe in Wisconsin seeks to offer sports betting in the state. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The tribal organization that serves 42 villages in Alaska's interior has ousted its chief and chairman. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, Tanana Chiefs Conference board members recalled PJ Simon following an all-day executive session last week.
Tanana Chiefs Conference board members representing villages did not publicly discuss why PJ Simon was voted out, but Simon was criticized this fall for management decisions, including the firing of longtime organization attorney Natasha Singh. TCC Vice President Charlene Stern presided over the recall vote during the public portion of the meeting, which was live streamed.
The motion is a motion to recall the chief chairman Simon by secret ballot. That's what was motion seconded and questions been called.
Independent auditors tallied the ballots and a required two-thirds majority supported Simon's recall. The board subsequently voted to have Chief Financial Officer Brian Ridley take over leadership of the organization until March, when a permanent replacement for Simon will be selected during TCC's annual convention. A statement from Ridley says his goal is to focus on, quote, healing and rebuilding. Simon's ouster follows a lawsuit filed last month by two villages against four TCC executive board members, including Vice President Stern, but not Simon. The Fairbanks Daily Newsminer reported last month that the suit alleges, quote, financial malfeasance, illegal meetings, and a secret agreement to pay off an unnamed former employee, unquote. A response statement from the TCC executive board says the litigation makes false allegations of fiscal irregularities, adding that the suit and social media, quote, attacks are intended to embarrass and intimidate our directors, unquote. For National Native News, I'm Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alaska.
The St. Croix Chippewa Indians is set to become the second Wisconsin tribe to legally offer sports betting at its casinos. Daniel Kading reports the Northern Wisconsin tribe follows the Oneida Nation, which was the first in the state to offer sports wagering late last month.
Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers and St. Croix Tribal Chairman William Reynolds signed a gaming compact amendment to allow betting on sports and other events. The change is subject to a 45-day review by the U.S. Department of Interior, which is expected to sign off on it. Reynolds says the tribe will offer betting on professional sports at all three of its casinos.
It means a lot to us, you know, not just economically for the tribe itself, but it also helped our tourism, you know, in our counties that our casinos reside in.
Betting on college or high school sports won't be allowed. The tribe is making additions and acquiring kiosks with the hopes of having all equipment in place by the Super Bowl in mid-February. The change would allow people to bet remotely on tribal land, but Reynolds says only in-person betting will be allowed for now. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
The Cherokee Nation is asserting the tribe's treaty right for citizens to hunt and fish on Cherokee land after the state of Oklahoma recently announced it will not renew tribal hunting and fishing compacts. Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. signed an executive order Monday asserting its rights. In absence of 2022 compacts, the Cherokee Nation will manage and regulate hunting and fishing on the Cherokee Nation. The existing compact expires December 31st. Tribal compacts were first signed in 2016. According to the Cherokee Nation, compacts have generated millions of dollars for the state for wildlife management, law enforcement, and conservation efforts. Tribes have guaranteed hunting and fishing rights on their lands, but the compacts allowed for expanded hunting and fishing opportunities for tribal citizens throughout the state. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Droughts and severe downpours are making farming more difficult than in the past. One seed-saving group is helping Kenyan farmers adapt to erratic weather. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In some parts of Kenya, the rainy season is getting shorter, causing drought. When rain does come, it sometimes falls during severe storms that cause floods and crop damage. That's making farming more difficult than it was in the past. Daniel Wanjama is co-founder of Seed Savers Network Kenya. The group trains growers to select and save seeds with erratic weather in mind.
One of the most important aspects of selection is selecting the fastest growing, by identifying the first one to flower.
He says fast-growing plants can reach maturity within a shorter growing season, before a drought sets in. The group also encourages farmers to avoid growing just one crop. Wanjama says planting a single crop makes farmers vulnerable because too much or too little rain can wipe out a harvest. So he suggests farmers grow a diverse range of crops that thrive in different conditions. For example, Wanjama says that if maize withers in a drought, farmers could still harvest sweet potatoes.
If sweet potatoes could not grow because rainfall was even less, we could have cassava.
So he says these methods could help Kenyan farmers protect their livelihoods in a warmer future. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. The producer for tonight's newscast is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Diane Bernard, Georgia Fort, Antonia Gonzalez, Nadia Romlagon, Suzanne Potter, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 8, it's Wednesday Talk Radio, news and commentary on local, national, and international issues.
At 9:30, it's Culture in Motion with Mike Crenshaw, covering art, culture, and politics with hip-hop as the guiding light. At 10, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's Art Talk Bus Stop, featuring interviews with artists, curators, and performers. Then at 11:30, it's Radio Zine, with a variety of intriguing public affairs programming. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO's currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact.
Making contact.
Welcome to Making Contact. I'm Anita Johnson. This fall, we've been bringing you episodes from But Next Time, a limited-run podcast about community-led disaster prevention and recovery. What I like most about this series is that it centers the voices of people organizing on the ground with the intention of learning from the past in order to do things different next time. This week is all about aftermath of disasters. We'll meet organizers in Houston who take on landlords and city officials for families living in substandard housing. Here's Bud Next Time on Making Contact.
When it rains, it pours through my living room windows, my kids' window.
The mold is deep inside of the walls and people are extremely sick. Years later, they still have not repaired a lot of these homes.
I'm Chriselle Pillay. Rose Adietta and I are your hosts for But Next Time, a podcast about the ways people tap into their resilience and organizing strength when catastrophe hits.
I'm Rose. Chriselle and I met through a network of grassroots advocates working on issues of racial justice, housing, and land.